This is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Got a lot of local news to get to. Got a little field trip to share with you about. Yesterday, right after the show, Nicole and I and my whole family, all three of my girls got off work. My son-in-law was free. My wife. So the seven of us piled our way into downtown Seattle to the Seattle Center and got a tour of the new hockey arena for the Seattle Kraken. That was really fun, Nicole. That was an awesome experience.
It was. It was actually fun to just get out and do something like that again.
Yeah. Yeah, but
and the arena's going to be pretty cool.
Well, it's fabulous. And it was very exciting for me because the CEO of the Kraken, Todd Lewicki, he invited us to come take a tour. And then the guy who showed us around, I had all my girls read about his background because he's a construction manager named Ken Johnson, who I want to get on the show because this is a very impressive bit of engineering that they're doing down there. But his fingerprints are all over the city. The King Street Station Clock Tower and the Pike Place Market remodels and the Seattle Seawall downtown. And now he's project manager on this arena. But it was very exciting for me. And he and I were talking because he grew up in this area too. And we both were kids who went to the Seattle Center Coliseum. His first concert beat mine. My first concert was at the Seattle Center Coliseum. I saw the Doobie Brothers on New Year's Eve, 76, 77. But Ken was telling me that his first concert was the Beatles at the Seattle Center Coliseum. So that's one that's going to be tough to top. But they showed us all around the new facility, and we went from the rim, which is at street level, all the way down to the floor where the hockey rink and basketball arena is going to be. And it's going to be very intimate and very cool. And those guys' enthusiasm is, I was a little skeptical about the Kraken name at first, but they're just so genuinely enthusiastic, and they want to do something that hopefully will galvanize people and bond the city the way the Seahawks have and the way the Mariners years ago did in 95 and 2001. So anyway, it's just very fun. And then they invited us this morning. I heard from them, Nicole, and they said, come on back in a few months when we're further along the construction and you can just see the progress we're making. So that'll be fun. We can go and update it. Did you post the pics for our listeners to see by any chance?
I did. They're on our Instagram and Facebook.
Okay. All right. So anyway, it was very nice of the Seattle Kraken and Todd Lewicki and Ken Johnson to give us the tour of the facility down there. It was fun. Felt like
it's pretty interesting all the special accommodations they had to make to be able to keep the roof, as far as, like you were saying, the ventilation, all that stuff that they had to, come up with these new plans because they needed to keep the roof when normally you would work with an open roof.
Yeah, and that's, I asked them about that because they said, well, it's a historical landmark, the Seattle Center Coliseum roofline, and you have to preserve the existing roof. And I said, why couldn't you just tear it all down and then replicate the old roof? But when you get into historical landmark status, you can't replicate. You have to preserve what's there. And I just can't imagine. That must have added hundreds of millions to the cost versus just tearing everything down and being able to work in a big giant pit and then building up from there. But no, it was fascinating. So it was very nice.
The other thing,
and I'm looking forward to seeing it all come together.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing you brought up was who is going to be the first concert that performs there. And that was interesting to think about because, you know, all of these artists are going to fight for the first concert rights.
Yes. And one of the partners in this whole project is Live Nation, which is the biggest concert promoter in the country. So they have access to pretty much every huge touring act, and especially after a 2020 where there are no concert tours and these artists, they're not, I mean, and that's their main source of money. You know, they're not making money off of, you know, music sales anymore. They get a little piece of Spotify, but you know, they don't make a lot off music sales. They make their money by attracting a big audience and then touring. And so being the first ever concert in this new building, which is being designed not just for hockey, but as really you know, one of the best concert hall destinations in the country, it'll be interesting to see which gigantic name they get to christen the building. It'll be big, though, whoever it is.
Expensive.
Yeah, for the first show ever. So anyway, thank you to the Seattle Kraken for having us down there and touring the brand new facility. It was very cool. I had one moment of anger as I was heading down there. So Nicole came over to our house. She carpooled with me, my wife, then my oldest daughter and son-in-law, they rode with us. And then my two younger daughters, they met us down there. But we're driving, and Waze took me off I-5, and we're on 80th, right by Blanchett High School. And there's quite a bit of traffic. It's right after my show. It's about 3:15, 3:30 yesterday afternoon. And there was some emergency, and a cop was racing down the street, and because so there was so much traffic, the cop was driving in the opposite lane of traffic. And there's this girl walking down the sidewalk. She looked like she might be 15. She looked like she was a high school kid. And she's just walking down the sidewalk by herself. And as the Seattle police car is with its siren going, as it's racing to whatever emergency, the girl throws up her left hand and is flipping off the police car, and she just was walking down the sidewalk, you know, flipping the bird for, I don't know, 10 seconds. And I was thinking, first of all, she looks ridiculous doing that. It's like a cult. It's like just these programmed cop haters that are in a cult in the city. And she looked ridiculous, but I was also thinking, what kind of a chance does this kid have if her first reaction to seeing a police car is to flip the bird? I mean, if you're filled with just that much anger and bile, you're probably, you have a lesser chance of achieving great things if you're filled with just that much raw, blind hatred for something as good and noble and decent as cops generally are. I just felt bad for her. First of all, I was angry because she looked so ridiculous. But then secondly, I just felt bad for her because she's part of this cult of hatred that has been created by our politicians, by our schools, this mania. And it's not serving our kids well. They go through life like that, and that's not somebody who has the best chance of being their best self. Now, I'm not saying she's not going to amount to anything. I'm not saying that by any means. I'm just saying if that's the way you comport yourself in public, you have a lesser chance of fantastic success than somebody who isn't programmed like that. So that was my little observation. That's why I don't go into the city, Nicole. You heard how angry I got as I was, you know, as I saw this girl flipping the bird to the cops.
You did, and your daughter pretty much told you to chill.
Yeah, my daughter said. Yeah, my daughter said, "Dad, you know," she goes, "Why does it upset you so?" And that's what I said. I said, "It's because she's not going to have as great a chance as possible of being a great human being, if that's the, and that's what is being created by the cultists in politics and public education. They're just not going to have their best chance at being successful if they display that way in public. But she can be, I guess, whatever she wants. I mean, she can. It's not that I don't think she'd be allowed, and I don't think you should be ticketed for flipping the bird at the cops, and none of that. I'm just sad for people like her. Okay, let's get into the fastest 15 here. A couple of weeks ago, there was a murder at a North Seattle motel. And now we find out that motel is being shut down because, this is your tax dollars at work, this motel on North Aurora, it's called the Everspring Inn. There have been two murders there now. There is just a constant flow of drug dealing and drug buying. And why are they all gathered at the Evergreen or Everspring Motel on Aurora? Well, according to Channel 4, ComoNews.com, the people who live there are living on your and my labor. They have vouchers to go live in this motel. So you and I are paying for a motel, and it's just riddled with drugs. There have now been two murders. ComoNews.com, they talked to a woman named Tyra Sorensen, who says the whole neighborhood has been terrified because of this motel that's housing the, you know, otherwise homeless drug addicts.
We've tried, you know, being helpful. We've tried complaining. We're very frustrated.
And she says the city is just absolutely failing.
It's scary for the people in the neighborhood, and I can't imagine that it's any less scary for people that that is their best option for housing. If this is the best that the city can offer, the city's failing, because it's not safe and it's not healthy, and people need safe and healthy housing.
So, again, this is what I was talking about an hour ago. This is what's being exported now from the city into the suburbs, into the more rural areas. You know, Dow Constantine, under the guise of a COVID health crisis, he bought that motel in Kent, and that's turned out to be just a nightmare for the people in that neighborhood. You have this mania, Sound Transit's building parking garages that's destroying some of our suburbs, and they are also mandating low-income housing go in around the parking garages. And unfortunately, there often is crime around the low-income housing developments. That's not a slam on people of low income. I am a child of poverty myself, but the undeniable truth, the facts, the statistics are that around low-income housing developments, there is increased crime. And so that's what they are exporting now. Now, it's, you know, this was on North Aurora, but it's coming to a suburb and a rural area near you. They're spreading it all around Western Washington right now. Okay, next up in the Festus 15, Jenny Durkin, she did not want to spend the city's rainy day fund on supposedly COVID-19. But again, what the other politicians want to spend it on is homelessness. And Jenny Durkin said, we can't afford this right now. We can't afford to just, because they don't have a plan, and the city council doesn't have a clue what they're going to, you know, they are going to defund the police, but they have no plan to replace our police department. And they're doing the same thing with homelessness. We have spent well over $1 billion in the last 10 years in Seattle and King County on homelessness. Over $100,000 per homeless person is spent on homelessness. And it all gets swallowed up in bureaucracy. And now the Seattle City Council, Jenny Durkin vetoed raiding the rainy day fund. And the city council said, nope, 6-2 vote. That overrides the veto. We're spending money. We're going to spend more money on homelessness, which means they're going to create more six-figure jobs for their buddies, for their cronies, and homelessness will get absolutely no better throughout the region here. In fact, I got to share this. I don't know if I still pulled this up. I might have to do this tomorrow. But a listener sent me, oh, I've got it. There's a flow chart for one city of Seattle department that listener Joe sent me. It's for the Office of Sustainable Environmentalism. And you should see, I mean, it's just comical. There's a director named Jessica Finn Coven. And then she has a communications manager, six figures. There's a senior executive assistant, six figures. An administrative specialist with benefits, six figures. And then the next level in the flowchart for sustainable environmentalism. There's a Eddie Gillis is the city's climate advisor. Why don't you just pick up your phone? That's going to be 95 on Sunday. There, I advise the city on climate. But no, we got to pay somebody six figures to be a climate advisor. And then right next to that person in the flowchart is the climate justice director. All of these people are making six figures. And we are told that we've got to get more of our tax money so we can pay more bogus jobs like environmental sustainability, climate advisor, climate justice director. It's a cult. It's all a cult. Okay, and then Nicole is texting me while I'm doing the Fastest 15 with some breaking news. Since you just sent this to me via text, Nicole, do you want to break it or do you want me to?
Oh, I want you to.
Okay. That's very exciting for me. My favorite supermodel, Chrissy Teigen. They just announced with she just announced with John Legend that they're expecting baby number 3.
I need
our poor, poor society. You texted me this in the middle of the Fastest 15.
I just gave it to you as soon as TMZ announced it.
Chrissy Teigen and John Legend. Hey, I hope you are masked up when you know. All right, all that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Again, our breaking news. Chrissy Teigen is expecting baby number 3. Okay, coming up next, lots of news from the presidential campaign trail. Kamala Harris. I'm trying to say her name right, because that's become some big issue, apparently. So we got a lot from the presidential campaign trail. It's heating up. We're getting close to Election Day. More straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Well, there's lots going on in the presidential campaign today. And there's a lot going on in the world of politics today. This gets no attention anymore, but the president today announced a huge breakthrough historic peace agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. And the United States helped broker this peace deal between Israel and the UAE. That would be a big deal if the most in the media at least fairly covered the president. I mean, you can cover all the stuff you don't like still, but wouldn't a fair press at least mention a historic peace deal being signed between two American allies, United Arab Emirates and Israel, that don't get along well with each other. Couldn't they at least mention that with all the hatred that they broadcast and print about the president? But now that doesn't get any attention. Nobody mentions that. But there is lots of other stuff going on the campaign trail as well. This was pretty hilarious. So I thought Kamala Harris's first name was, at first I thought it was Kamala. And then I started saying Kamala, which I guess is right. That's correct. But it's easy to goof up, apparently. So yesterday on his show, Tucker Carlson, he said her name wrong. I guess he said Kamala. And CNN went berserk. They talked about how racist Tucker Carlson is, that he mispronounced her name on purpose. I mean, they were just sent in a rage over that.
I want you to listen to how Tucker Carlson, the best he could do was to somehow mangle her name. Listen. Just tell Kamala Harris what to say.
Kamala. He was calling her Kamala Harris instead of Kamala. Now, this is the state of media today, of CNN today. So they had a big round table, five people in five boxes, because somebody on another network pronounced it Kamala, and it's Kamala. This is so silly, but it gets even better. There's a really good kicker to this whole thing. But okay, let's get back to the world's most important network, CNN.
I want you to listen to how Tucker Carlson, the best he could do was to somehow mangle her name. Listen. Just tell Kamala Harris what to say, and she will say it. That is the whole point of Kamala Harris.
I call him Schmucker Carlson, but it's an ethnic term, so he might not understand it.
But then at the end, it's laughable because he's like, or whatever. So it's like, no, it's not whatever. It is about you having to finally face what you have done to this country, to black people, to black women. There's nothing or whatever about this moment.
Okay. So big round table on CNN because he called her Kamala instead of Kamala. And that's a sure sign of racism, according to CNN. Absolute sign of racism. Only one problem with the CNN narrative. Remember, you can't say Kamala. Here's Joe Biden introducing his vice president nominee yesterday.
I told him I wanted to be the last person in the room before he made important decisions. That's what I asked Kamala.
Kamala? Joe Biden, what a racist! It's Kamala! I heard an entire CNN roundtable tell me that it's Kamala, and Joe Biden being the racist. If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. There's no diversity in the black community. But he calls her Kamala, too. Did CNN do a roundtable about what a racist Joe Biden is? I'm serious. How can anybody take any of these clowns seriously when they are just so clearly ridiculous? Oh, it's funny. Okay, then you got the guy at the top of the ticket, Joe Biden. Joe has an idea that he's pitching now, and he's sure that this will lift him to the presidency. Between now and Election Day in November, Joe Biden is asking all local governments in the country to mandate that all of us wear masks when we're outside for the next 3 months, inside and outside. For the next 3 months.
Doesn't have anything to do with Democrats, Republicans, or independents. It has to do with a simple proposition. Every single American should be wearing a mask when they're outside for the next 3 months at a minimum. Every governor should mandate, mandatory mask wearing. The estimates by the experts are it will save over 40,000 lives in the next 3 months. 40,000 lives. The people act responsibly. And it's not about your rights, it's about your responsibilities as an American.
Boy, doesn't it get scary when politicians use phrases like, it's not about your rights? That's the biggest problem I have with this whole political approach to the, you know, so-called health crisis. It's not about a health crisis. It's about finding how far can they strip away and erode our rights. But right at the end there, Joe Biden, who wants to be your president, says it's not about your rights, but it's about government. Jay Inslee will tell you what is your responsibility, and your rights don't matter anymore. That's exactly what he said. He wants every governor to mandate mask wearing outside for the next 3 months. And if anybody says, no, I'm a free person. Nope, it's not about your rights. Government will tell you what is your responsibility. And you must do as you are ordered by your overseers in government. It's not about your rights. Would you, if let's say Jay Inslee follows Joe Biden's advice and orders you to wear a mask every time you go outside for the next 3 months. Will you obey? Will you be a good subject of government edict and obey? I've told you a million times, I wear a mask when I go to the grocery store. I peel it off the second I step out into the parking lot. Because it's my right to do so. Or at least it used to be. According to Joe, we don't have rights anymore. Government will just tell us what our responsibilities are. That's of supreme importance. Okay, quick time out. Lots more to come, including a very compelling case. Should your kids be kept off the playing fields this fall? One of the best arguments I've heard against keeping kids away from sports. I'll share it with you coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, coming up in the big lead at 2, I got an email from Jenny Durkin's sister. You're not going to want to miss this. I will share it with you right after the big lead, or right after the news at the top of the hour, in the big lead at 2 o'clock, coming up in a few minutes. The email I got from Jenny Durkin's sister. It's pretty interesting. Nancy Pelosi, before I get to the your kids in sports, I just didn't have time to play this last segment. Nancy Pelosi, this is a very, very interesting point that she was trying to make.
And so the virus has picked up steam, and they, and like a freight train, is coming down the tracks, and they, like a convoy going as slow as the slowest ship, are going so slowly that they'll never overtake the virus.
Oh, now I get it. I didn't understand what this whole COVID-19 was all about until just now. Thanks, Nancy. Should your kids... These are the people in charge. Should your kids be playing sports this fall? The WIAA says no. No high school sports this fall. At first, they were going to let the more socially distanced sports like cross country, but now most conferences are saying, nope, we're not going to do any sports this fall at all. A football coach in Pennsylvania, who's also a state representative, he made a great point about when did our kids' health decisions become the sole decision, not of parents, but of government.
When I hear things like it's not worth the risk, first of all, as a coach, I've had the opportunity to watch this football team at Bedford prepare for this year. And we told them, you know, if you wear your mask, you social distance at meetings, you know, split your time in the weight room. They've done all those things. We said, if you follow these protocols, you will have the opportunity to play. To now come back to them and say, you've done everything right, but you know what, we still don't have the will to let that happen. And I think back to those words, it's not worth the risk. We know, most of us up here have either played or been a part of athletics. We understand that there's inherent risk to what we do. That's why there's an ambulance that sits out by the football fields on Friday night. We know that there is risk. But always that risk-benefit-reward ratio has always been left up to the families to determine, is this worth the physical risk? Well, I don't see any difference in that now. And quite frankly, the governor has himself said, when he was out in a protest in the streets of Harrisburg, he said when asked, did you follow your own protocols? He goes, no, I didn't, because I felt the cause was worth the risk. Well, we cannot just allow one person in Pennsylvania to discern for everyone which causes are worth the risk and which are not. That decision needs to be left up to parents, and it needs to be left up to families. Is it worth the risk? I believe that in my case it is. Maybe some other people don't. But at the end of the day, if we're going to leave that decision only up to one person, then we have a problem that's far greater than COVID-19.
Now, this is something I've talked about for a long, long time, and that is government taking over the decision-making for our kids, where parents used to be the decision-makers. And I'm talking about Seattle high schools that will whisk a girl off for an abortion without informing her mom what's going on. I'm talking about activist people who will convince a child to change their gender with powerful, life-impacting drugs, with the parents being left out of the equation. And this is just another example of where government's taken over all the decision-making for our children and their health. Why do people put up with it? All right, letter from Durkin's sister, next.